No point mentioning these reservations to Connie. He's skipping around the place like he's fallen in love. That's why Titch has taken it upon himself, in his capacity as master of ceremonies, to have a little sneak preview of the quartet's performance. And guess what? The noise coming from behind that rehearsal room door does not sound like classical music. Or some of it does. But those parts keep getting drowned out by other parts that sound like the Death Star exploding. And even as he watches, concealed within an alcove, Mario and Niall stagger by, hefting A, a computer, and B, some sort of satellite dish. The whole thing is fishier than a mermaid's twat. Titch decides to take the matter directly to the top, i.e., Mr. Costigan.
Actually quite busy here, Fitzpatrick.
Yes, sir, but it's important.
He explains his misgivings about the quartet's readmittance and the strange noises he heard outside the rehearsal room.
Death Star? Fitzpatrick, what in God's name are you...
Then the phone goes.
Costigan? Well, well, Jack Flaherty, old son of a gun. How are you, big guy? How's everything in petrochemicals? A little bird told me you guys were running out. Ha ha, of course not. Listen here. We're throwing a little shindig over here, Saturday.
The chair swivels away. Titch stands there, jilted a moment, before becoming aware that Brother Jonas is staring at him from the other side of the room.
What is troubling you, my child?
He says, in his soft, muggy African voice. Titch takes one look at the little black man, and another at the acting principal, gabbing away with his feet on the desk. He smiles.
Nothing, brother. It's not important.
Then he leaves the office. If they want to ignore their own master of ceremonies, they deserve everything they get. It was Jeekers, not Dennis, whom Jeff thought they would have the hardest time getting back on board. Privately, he wondered if Ruprecht might be better off not mentioning the whole séance experiment end of things. Jeekers generally being quite straight-laced, and not such a séance experiment sort of fellow, especially with his parents looking on. But to Jeff's surprise, Jeekers agreed straight away, to all of it. Actually, he even seemed glad about the clandestine element, as if he'd been waiting for just such a secret enterprise to burrow himself away in. That doesn't mean the rehearsals are plain sailing.
It just doesn't sound right.
The three subordinate members of the Van Doren Quartet lower their instruments for the nth time with pained expressions.
It sounds like it's always sounded. What do you want it to sound like?
That's just it. Ruprecht doesn't know. He stares blearily at his notes. Symbols, mathematical and musical, chitter back at him meaninglessly, like glyphic fleas hopping about the page. They have been in here for what seems like years, playing Pachelbel over and over and over, until they can hear it even when they have stopped. So that when Jeff starts in again about how he wishes he could work out what the hell it reminded him of, Dennis gives him short shrift.
You idiot, it reminds you of itself. It reminds you of the 9 squillion times you've heard it before.
I don't think that's it.
Trust me.
All right.
Ruprecht taps his baton on the oscillator.
Let's try it again.
They try it again. In Jeff's opinion, which he will accept as triangle player, is not worth all that much. Certainly not as much as Jeekers's or Dennis's. They sound pretty good, especially considering their fortnight-long hiatus, and that Ruprecht's French horn looks like it was run over by a truck. The sweet, sad notes slide circling slowly around them. Durr, 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 durr. Darn it, Dennis is wrong. It's not itself it reminds him of. But what the hell is it? It's driving him mad. Oh, wait. Here's his triangle part. Ping!
Stop! Stop!
Ruprecht, who has been playing with an ear cocked and his brow so parodically furrowed his forehead resembles a concertina, holds up his hand.
What?
Dennis beginning to fray at the edges.
What is it this time?
It's like there's something missing.
Ruprecht says wretchedly, seizing at his hair. The room is a latticework of sidelong glances. Time is running out.
Dur, 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 dur.
Jeff thinks.
Maybe.
Jeekers says slowly.
We should just play it the old way.
Bom, 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 bom.
Because we'll still know it's for Skippy. And, you know, there's going to be a presentation.
It's Bethany!
Jeff exclaims. Everyone turns to look at him.
Oh, sorry. I just realized what Packle thing reminds me of. That Bethany song? You know, the one Skippy used to play? After he went to see the girl? If you listen to it, it's actually the same tune. Sorry,
he says again, as from every direction stares bore into him, and then...
What?
Friday night in the residence. The residence is what everyone calls it. They act like it's this exclusive hotel. But inside it's like being trapped in the world's most boring horror movie. A house full of zombies with grey faces and huge hollow eyes that track you as you come down the stairs and stare at you as you search through the magazine rack for a magazine you haven't read yet. And when they move like people who aren't really alive, shuffling over the flowery carpet at like 0 miles per hour, with their arms hanging like old string at their sides, and their Prada jeans flapping around their stick waists. And worst of all, their horrible, disgusting breath, like something is rotting inside them. That's why most of the time Laurie stays in her room, except when she has to go to U time, or group. She lies on her bed, holding Lala to her chest. The tears just come by themselves. She is not sad. Her room actually is a bit like a hotel room. There are fresh-cut flowers and flounces on the bedspread. And though there is no TV, you can write in the journal they give you to record your thoughts, or sit by the window and look through the bars at the garden. Some girls, it is all girls, have been here for months or even longer. Most of them are sicker than Laurie. Still, they laugh when Laurie tells them she won't be staying. Some are from the years above or below her at school. Some she recognizes from the mall or mass. Or they will turn out to be someone's sister or ex-best friend. There's one girl who Laurie was in ballet class with years ago. She used to be so beautiful, like a beautiful dancing flower. Now she looks like some vampire drank all her blood and threw her away. For a little while, Laurie felt sorry for her and made an effort to talk to her. Then she found out the girl was telling everyone that Laurie came into her room at night and tried to touch her. The residence, you see, is basically exactly the same as school. Bitchiness and cliques. All the girls in a secret race to be the thinnest. In group, they fight with each other to get Dr. Pollard's attention, sucking their fingers, swinging their legs back and forth, weighing each other up, ha-ha, out of the corner of their eye, while he shites on about esteem. It's pathetic. It's freaky. Like watching skeletons trying to be erotic. You can practically hear their bodies rattle. In her journal she writes, macabre. Dr. Pollard is a total dweeb. He wears lame Christmas-type jumpers every single day, and you can tell the only reason he knows about self-esteem is because he learned it out of a book. Still, they drool over him like he's the last piece of chocolate cake, which they will vomit up afterwards anyway. Group is really the only time Laurie misses being beautiful. She would love to show these skanks how it's done. Wrap Dr. Pollard around her finger and then get up and walk right out of there. At the door she'd turn and blow him a kiss. Dream on, loser! Yesterday the woman from the modelling agency called Mom and told her not to worry. They could reschedule the interview for when Laurie was feeling better. This kind of thing happens all the time, she said. The important thing is to intervene before any lasting damage is done to the complexion. Mom told her this, then she threw her arms around her.
Oh, Laurie, get better. Don't throw away the chances I never had.
Laurie hates to upset her. She would almost get better just to go to the interview and make Mom happy again. But the weird thing is, she doesn't care anymore if she doesn't become a model. She doesn't even remember wanting to be a model. So many things seem like they happened to another person, someone almost too fuzzy to see. She has been here nearly 2 weeks now. Most of the time it's okay, but sometimes in the middle of the night there are sirens. The sound so loud and swooping, it makes her sit up cold in her bed. And then next morning when you wake up, someone is gone. You hear the nurses say, "Poor thing, she's at death's door." And you imagine the door black as black. But it's all about how you think of things. Like, okay, the door is scary, but the word siren makes her think of singing girls. So when she gets scared about her plan and going through the door, she imagines that's what they are. Singing girls who come and take you by the hand and bring you away from here. And that makes her happy again, because she knows soon they will come for her. It could even be tonight.
Tell me about Daniel, Laurie.
Dr. Pollard sits on a revolving chair. She sits on a beanbag. There are no bars on his window. Outside it's raining. How come the rain doesn't rise up and turn into a sea and smash through the glass? Some kind of spray is in Dr. Pollard's hair to puff it out and make it look like he's not going bald.
It was shortly after his death that you began to experience these self-destructive urges, and you became addicted to diet pills.
She rolls her eyes because of how boring it is to have to explain this all over again. She has explained like a million times already. It didn't have anything to do with Daniel. She started taking the pills because she thought she might be pregnant. But then she'd found out she wasn't pregnant, and everything was getting back to normal. Better than normal. She was going to be a top model. She went dancing with Janine in L.A. Nights and kissed a boy, a sixth year. He was on the Terenure S. She was looking to the future. She would have stopped taking the pills if she'd even thought about it for a second.
So why didn't you?
Why didn't I what?
Why didn't you stop taking the pills?
She sighs. She wriggles in her seat, rolls her eyes again. How are you supposed to explain this stuff? It wasn't anything. It was just she started noticing things.
Like what?
Annoying things. Stupid stuff. It's totally stupid. There's no point even talking about it.
Give me an example.
Oh, whatever. Like the way Mom kept buying her clothes for the interview with the modeling agency. Like every day, practically, she'd go out and buy a new outfit. Even though they'd both decided the one she had was perfect. Or if it wasn't an outfit, it was something else. Pumps, eyeshadow, clutch purse, mules. Try these on, Laurie. Try them with that. Then try that with this. Oh, how about these with those? She wanted Laurie to make an impression. That was all. It just started getting a bit annoying. And meanwhile, Dad had ordered new separates for his den, and also new gym equipment for the gym. Except the extension was still being done, so they were all heaped up in the hallway in cardboard boxes. Great big piles that bulged like Dad's new muscles. And as well, though she knew it was starting to bother her, Laurie kept buying things too. In the mall on Saturdays with the money Mom gave her to cheer herself up. Makeup and magazines and bangles and knickers and tops. And these things that just appeared in bags in her hands. And suddenly, it was like the house was filling up with stuff. More and more every day. More and more and more. More and more and more and more and more. More, 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 more. Like millions of teeming sperms, heaping and piling and crowding. Until she began to imagine one day it would come bursting through her door and pin her against the wall. And the only thing she could do was keep taking the pills. Because they could make little spaces for her, open up new spaces that she could slip into to breathe. It was like she had to keep shrinking herself just so there'd be enough space for her.
That's good, Laurie. That's very good.
It's why Laurie's room here is practically empty. She made them take out a lot of the furniture and most of the flowers and presents she gets from people, she asks the nurse to keep downstairs. From home, there is only Lala on her pillow and her Bethany scrapbook, and when Dad comes to visit, she often pretends she's asleep, turning her face to the window while he sits there flicking through a men's health magazine, unconsciously flexing and bulging.